Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen, Executive VP of the Center for Security Policy, sitting in for my boss, Frank Gaffney, who has taken the war for the free world on the road. I have the pleasure, this first segment, of talking with Mike Pregent, who is Director of Veterans Against the Deal, specifically the Iran deal, also an adjunct fellow at the Hudson Institute, and he writes at one of my favorite, completely balanced, right-wing conservative outlets, The Daily Beast. Maybe not quite so conservative. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim.
Well, hey, I wanted to dig into actually a piece you wrote at The Daily Beast, talking about how Iran is making it impossible for the U.S. to beat ISIS. Catch us up on some of the things they've been doing to, you know, make life for the Sunnis they're liberating a living hell.
All we have to do is look at Ramadi. Look at what happened. It's not necessarily the Shia militia that took place in the raid, or not the raid, but the I don't want to even call it the liberation, the leveling of Ramadi or the rubbling of Ramadi. What took place is a predominantly Shia force went into Ramadi and leveled it. You know, even the Anbar governor is surprised at how much damage was done. And that's something you can't do. Now, remember, part of this leveling process was by Kitab Hezbollah militias that were in the outer cordon, or basically launching crude artillery and rockets at Ramadi, basically taking down any building they thought had an ISIS fire. So when you look at what has happened in Iraq, you know, Tikrit was a revenge op. Beji is an infrastructure op. Ramadi was something they were forced to do. Tikrit, they were able to muster 30,000 Shia militia volunteers to go into Tikrit that still couldn't do anything until U.S. airstrikes came in. In Ramadi, they could barely muster 3,000 because Ramadi is really not a revenge op. Ramadi really has no significance for these Shia militias. But they had no problem punishing it with crude rockets and artillery. Now, as we look at Mosul, we're looking at the last 18 months and what we've done in Iraq. The force to retake Mosul hasn't even been built yet. You can't do it with Peshmerga. I came back from Iraq in November, met with Peshmerga commanders and talked about the Mosul offensive, and they said, listen, we need Sunnis. The only way we're going to be able to take back Mosul is with Sunnis. But this government continues to not allow U.S. advisors to train a majority Shia force or reactivate a Sunni force that was actually purged by Maliki. When I say reactivate, there are 30,000 Sunnis that were trained by the United States that participated in the surge that are no longer the Iraqi security forces because Maliki purged them from 2008 to 2012. They're sitting on the sidelines. They could simply be brought back in with back pay and back rank, and they would be an effective fighting force that knows every block in Mosul, every street in Mosul, every power center in Mosul, and no one's talking about reactivating these guys because of the pressures of the Shia militias. And one other thing. The three Americans that were kidnapped in Baghdad, State Department had information, and this is in that CBS report, that an Iranian-backed Shia militia was going to kidnap Americans. And State asked Iran to put pressure on them to hold off until after implementation day, after the Iran deal actually went into effect. Didn't ask them not to do it, just asked them to hold off. That's very telling.
It's obscene, Mike. I mean, that basically right there is the entire problem with the lack of a coherent strategy. And even worse, as they do this, part of the rationale for Obama's bomb-only precision strike strategy, and only bomb if you can ensure that there's no civilian within, you know, 100 miles or so, was to stop the collateral damage. Yet the very policy he's now put into place, like you said, has led to the leveling, a la World War II Band of Brothers carpet bombing of Ramadi, killing just thousands of civilians. Is there any way this is going to slow down, or is it just going to escalate and become more of a sectarian war?
Well, it's touted as a success. The football was spiked. Ramadi is cleared. And then when you actually look at it, And, you know, Vice President Iyadalawi and the government of, and the governor of Al-Anbar cannot believe the amount of damage done to rid 600 ISIS fighters from a town. Ramadi is not a model for Mosul. You cannot level buildings in Mosul to take out 4,500 ISIS fighters who have had their salaries drastically reduced from $500 a month to $50 a month. You know, it should be an intelligence-driven counterinsurgency operation where you target leadership with precision strikes and you actually build a force on the ground that's able to go in, recruit sources, partner with sources to actually get actual intelligence to take out ISIS leaders, to scare them, to get that Sunni population to turn against them by seeing that they're vulnerable. Those are the things you have to do. But again, back to these three Americans that were kidnapped. We could, if you saw the State Department release, it said, we'd like to thank the Iraqi government for securing the release of our missing Americans. How do you secure the release of someone who's missing? They were kidnapped by Shia militias, but to say that puts our U.S. advisors at risk because you would basically be disparaging a group that we're actually training and supporting. Think about that. We didn't say, we didn't go after these Iranian-backed militias with the military. State was in the lead. They had to negotiate, and nothing happens in Iraq without a dollar sign in front of it. There's no way these guys were released without something being paid. They knew they couldn't use the military to target whether it was AAH or Saraj or Jihad or whatever other group that was that has links to Iran, because to do so would have meant going after the very militias you're training and supporting in Iraq to fight ISIS. It has a very polarizing effect on the very Sunnis we need to fight ISIS when they see the U.S. is partnering with a sectarian government. I hate to, I don't want to say that, but it is. Prime Minister Abadi himself is even under pressure. He cannot make changes. He's already been threatened with a no-confidence vote by the very Shia militias that Iran is paying and funding. And this is the problem. When you go in there and you meet with uniformed Iraqi generals, you're not meeting with the right guys. Go meet with Hadi al-Amri. Go meet with Prime Minister Maliki, the former prime minister, because they're still in freaking charge.
And if only there was a model for doing something like that, where in an area like that, we had trained militias to turn into the actual good guys to fight an al-Qaeda-like enemy. Oh, wait, wasn't that the surge? Didn't we do that successfully and kill these guys once before Obama cut and ran? We know how to do it, and they refused to do it.
It was so effective that General Petraeus felt very comfortable then taking President-elect Obama on a tour of the battlefield to show where these security initiatives were. And in 2008, that's when Obama said, I don't care about the surge or whether it's working, we're out of here. And that conversation wasn't limited to that aircraft. That conversation was heard by Shia militias, was heard by Iran, and was heard by the very Sunnis that have put their lives at risk to decimate al-Qaeda and work with the U.S. forces and Iraqi forces on the ground. Remember, U.S. casualty rates dropped significantly once we stood up the Sons of Iraq and the Sahwa, and so did, and al-Qaeda was decimated. When that helicopter ride took place in 2008, it sent a message. We're leaving, you're about to be abandoned, and we're tilting towards Iran. And we saw a lot of the other activity behind the scenes taking place with the release of Iranian-requested, IRG-affiliated Shia commanders and terrorists that we had at Cropper, that we had in U.S. detention, who had American blood on their hands. And we watched Case Kazali released, Laith Kazali released, and Lebanese advisor to Asab al-Haq, Doc Duke, released. Three guys that General Petraeus, Odierno, President Bush, and everybody in his National Security Council said these guys would never get released because they have... We have direct evidence that they kidnapped five Americans in Karbala, killed one on site, executed four in the back of a vehicle when they failed to get away to get back to Iran to secure the release of four Iranian agents captured in Erbil.
Unfortunately, until we get a new commander-in-chief, none of this will change. But fortunately for us and hopefully for the area, we're having an election and we have the opportunity to watch Barack Obama pack. And God willing, and the creek don't rise, someone with a clue enter the White House. I'm Mike Pregent, director of Veterans Against the Deal, also an adjunct fellow at the Hudson Institute. Thanks for helping us see just how bad things have gotten due to this partnership with Iran. Up next, we'll be talking with Bill Gertz, who is senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, as well as the Inside the Ring columnist at the Washington Times. This is Jim Hansen. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.